Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I have prepared a most deliciously ghoulish entertainment for this occasion. Horrifying tales of wonder. Ghost stories. Weird tales of the macabre. The producers of this radio program would be most gratified for your generous support, which can be arranged at patreon.com/talesofwonderpod. And as per usual, we wish to make clear that we assume no legal responsibility whatsoever for any case of death by fright. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I am, of course, your humble host, Beltravius Mountcastle. And on this unearthly evening, I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine. Now, as it happens, she suffers the misfortune of being confined to a sanitarium for the criminally insane. But, well, she's consented to let us sit in on a little interview with her attending physicians in The Incarceration of Roberta Powell by Lena Ing.
I tell you, doctors, you three judges in white coats, that this was more than just a dream. I have answered your questions, all of them, for hours on end, honestly, truthfully, but you choose not to believe me. There is nothing left to say unless you take seriously my words and not look at me as a madwoman. You bind me in this straitjacket, which in the end will not detain me, and jail me within the imposing concrete walls of the Piambrum Sanitarium. I am not myself. How could I have killed him? I am but a bud on a monstrous plant. I wish I could say I knew what happened to Dr. Hapsburn. I had told the wrong people of my visions and voices. As a prophet, I was never heeded. He had always treated me kindly. Over the years, he had turned into some semblance of a friend. We had come to a special understanding, a relationship more than that of doctor to patient. In the beginning, like yourselves, he was sceptical, even more so than you are now. But with the force of my conviction, he began to believe. I wish I could say he rests in peace, but I know too much now to think this might be true. Over the course of our daily talks, him seated on a metal chair, thoughtfully stroking his thick beard with slight shakes of his head as he listened to my tales, I, with bony back against the padded walls, he gradually grew fascinated with the talk of my quest into the unknown. It is the nature of man to solve a mystery. You doctors are fascinated with the mysteries of the mind. If you could, you would crack my skull open, peel back the glistening mesentery, and lay bare the tangle of thoughts which scramble my brain, attempt to read the patterns of sulky and gyri, as though the enigma of thought could be solved through the exposure of physical flesh. I am not a mechanism made of meat, an organic automation. Your quest is to find the link between brain and mind, between flesh and thought, to affect consciousness through matter. Since you can't, you study me as a specimen, asking question upon question in different ways, on different days, wanting to know the circumstances that led me to be incarcerated in this asylum. Then why is it difficult to understand that I too wish to solve mysteries further than human perception can explore? I have delved into the passages of higher learning, graduating summa cum laude in each of my degrees from the Olcane University. I have memorized the passages, recited the words, blended the poisons, inhaled their fumes, all for the pursuit of knowledge. Indulge me a bit at my nostalgia, remembering my time in study. Reading led to more reading, down a spiral of unanswered questions of philosophy, reality, existentialism, spiritualism. What is our place in the universe? Holy scriptures tell stories of our creation, Are we made in God's image or he in ours? And what of older gods who lurk much further in the past than human consciousness? I have conversed with all the great theosophists, the occultists and leading metaphysicists of the day. I have read theoretical papers which postulated planes of existence outside our understanding, much like how a dog's perceptions of sight, sound, and smell are far broader than our own. My ambitions, however, greatly outstrip yours. While you wish to solve the mysteries of the human mind, such narrowness of scope, I thirst for the knowledge of worlds, of realities, not only of this plane of existence, but of those beyond. Do you believe in life beyond death, doctors? What if I told you there was life beyond this life? You cannot see radiation, yet you apply it to medicine. You cannot hear certain frequencies, yet you harness their use. White light splits into more than just the colors of the rainbow. As the numbers of stars are infinite, so are the number of planes of existence. Dr. Hapsburn also harbored secret designs to learn of the occult. I could ascertain his fascination by the unwavering gleam in his eyes when I spoke of what little I knew of Parthotep and the other ancient entities, the antediluvian ones, that humans are too young in history and too blind to horror to see. I shared with Dr. Hapsburn my understanding thus far of the primeval religions, the deities who slumber but would one day awake. As the world was created for their own reasons, they came from the sky, Phalotep and Camotens, Thelu and Slagoth, Harkens, Zianlin and Kisbil and Jokbo, the antediluvian ones, each with their own rituals and worshippers who tear their flesh in religious frenzy, their words of worship written on bone in the lost, blasphemous texts. Have you seen their temples? Hulking buildings made from gold and bone. Etched in wood are unpronounceable prayers to be felt with the fingertips, sung by the heart. A silver altar at the center, which on ceremonial occasions would be stained red with blood. Chalices of skulls and tusk and horn. Mute monks buried with honor in the name of the Old One's glory, encased in carved prayer statues. Towers that directed the eye to the heavens. Dr. Hapsburn would sit hypnotized at my descriptions. Slowly, with practice of breathing techniques and visual spatial meditation, the worlds I had described began to reveal themselves to him. At night he would repeat a mantra, lulling himself into a trance. During the day, we discussed our dreams. As his concentration grew more focused, he began to see what I had described. The dancing waves of the Sea of Yogorda, the fire-capped mountains of Zepsil, the jagged rocks of Hordovian's Pass, the primitive land, and the first day of Earth's creation. Then he dreamed of the proto-humans, the species far older than the Neanderthals and the Denisovians, Gruleds who worshipped the fire in the places where lightning struck. He saw the monsters they had hunted, and which in turn hunted them. To Dr. Hapsburn, his dreams were so real that he could see the fear in their eyes, see the crawl of their skin in the darkness, feel the heat from the erupting volcanoes, taste the ash in the air. Dr. Hapsburn wanted to experience for himself, to see and understand with his own sound mind the things that I had said. He wanted to go back further in time, to witness the old rituals of worship for himself. That fateful night, he came to my cage at a late hour, and with a long, skeletal key unlocked the door. I needed no help unbinding the straitjacket. It loosened and fell from my body. I followed him through the hidden claustrophobic passages of the asylum, where the dreams of madmen darkened the halls. At the emergence from the asylum, our positions changed, and I became the leader. I led him past the houses of gambrel roofs with thick, heavy shadows, through the grey tall city, towards the campus of my old haunting, Olcane University, where I had spent many, can I say, happy hours delving into the collections, fragile, yellow-tinged books, filled with esoteric and arcane knowledge that my professors had expressly forbade. I had to use all my powers of persuasion to gain access to these secret tomes. Is it not the perversion of nature to want what you cannot have, to taste the forbidden fruit, to drink the juice of obscure knowledge? Have you read the Gorgonology? Felt with quivering fingers its razorback spine? Have you signed the Book of Mortimordium? I have, gladly, with blood, slicing my skin with the sharpened tip of the quill. Do you not burn for the knowledge that cast us out from paradise? Dr. Hapsburn had done his own research, and something he found must have lit a spark. When he came that night to retrieve me, his dreams had revealed the truth of what I had told him. He had seen the dagger point, skyward-reaching towers of Sildas, the symbol of folly, the massive, cryptic cats of Usane, who carry the world's history in the root of their teeth, the gleaming cloud hordes of Kidsanth, where the gods rest, more expansive than the dreams of Valhalla. Why do certain themes repeat themselves in legends and myth? Can you not see the patterns in these stories? The patterns in our stars? Birth, death, rebirth, resurrection. Despite the cycle of our lives, some things remain eternal. I pray they never awaken from their slumber. To you, men of science, dreams are nothing but a flicker of random images. To you, the content means nothing. The images, nothing. You don't see the power in dreams. You don't understand the use of dreams as a portal, as a warning from the future, as an instrument which can be harnessed for astral travel. I have explored the cities of the subconscious, the dreamlands, where anything is possible, populated with inhabitants both great and terrible. Through my dreams I have trembled through the enchanted forest, a place of obscene green with hanging, vicious lashes of ovril vine. The phosphorescent insects interplayed with spectral lights through the mist and grasping branches. The perfumed breeze wrapped itself around me. My footsteps skimmed the surfaces of the crumbling leaves, and in the palm of my hand, a gold coin appeared. I swallowed the currency of knowledge, and saw past my birth, to a place where time folded at the nexus of the infinity knot, and the paths I had walked, I would walk again. On other nights I dove into the ocean of remembrance. I was surrounded by the black waters of a miles-deep mausoleum, the graveyard of ancient creatures before the evolution of language. Their bones littered the ocean's floor. In some watery valleys of freshwater lakes, their colour a bright blue, unlike the deeper indigo of the surrounding ocean. Temples on their shores were raised from bleached whale bones, the heavy jaws framing the doors, the skulls of prehistoric leviathans decorating the posts. Flowing through the eerie structures, glowing currents shimmered with luminescent organisms. Beneath my feet, sand gleamed like gold. The corals bloomed with scarlet tendrils, yellow-striped fish darting among their arms. Deep in my dream waves, at the bottom of the waters, I have walked the crumbling stones of the sunken city of Raskanthrop. Where there was once the shining gem of culture and knowledge, now lay the ravages of decay and death. The songs composed of its grandness. In the sun's rays lies radiance of its beauty. In the splendour of life is Raskanthrop. The once glorious city had decomposed into a corpse, The buildings fold upon themselves in worrying asymmetry, their architects trained in non-Euclidean geometry. The streets, not parallel roads, patterned in the primal spiral, uncovered by Fibonacci, but mutated into a monstrous form. The houses arranged in symbolic sequence, coiled for ritualistic effect. The spectres of its inhabitants, clad in robes of red and gold, passed me, and I shivered as I crossed their paths. They know when the gods will awaken. They rejoice in the coming destruction. When the last night falls and the dawns fail to rise, when the sun burns itself down to cinders, when the stars cross in portentous formations, when the raging vortex steals the earth's shroud of beauty, when the birds halt their songs and grow withered, when foretelling becomes truth, when the underworld erupts in fury, overflowing, just as the gods had witnessed the beginning of time, they will rise and witness the end. Dr. Hapsburn insisted he had found the location of this city. This city I have seen in my dreams. Its entrance was at the caves of Cunclyth, close to the Serenarian Sea. The cave's mouth is slightly taller than 7 feet. The interior soars to the proportions of a cathedral. Glowing runes etched upon the walls encode some malevolent pattern, and giant bats gibber and shriek through the darkness. Slimy moisture drips from the stalactites that grow like jagged teeth. Dr. Walker, you look skeptical, as though you've never heard of this location. It was a place of ritual sacrifice, and so many people have disappeared over the centuries that it has fallen from our collective memory. An unconscious mechanism, I would presume, to protect our existence as a species. It is a cave that exists on a different plane than our ordinary waking consciousness. It can hide us in direct sight, but under certain circumstances it can be viewed. The positioning of the obscured planets, the trajectory of Sazladar's stars, the meditative force and focused concentration of the seeker. Its location can also be revealed in dreams. I have long dreamed of this place, and with deep practice of guided meditation, Dr. Hapsburg had dreamed of it too. In the chill, foggy air, I closed my eyes, and by using blind sight, we followed the footsteps of our dreams. I felt the cave's preternatural presence before I saw it. Within its belly, I opened my eyes and beheld a terrible beauty. The hypnotic coil of shimmering scales, the black maw of eternity, the flash and sting of eons of extinct life and the outstretched millennia of future life. The burning colours, the screaming lights, the choke of phantasms. How can I describe what I saw? I cannot describe what I can't comprehend. I could only clutch my temples in despair. I don't know what Dr. Hapsburn saw. We intercept our visions through the lens of our own perceptions, just as we would experience a hallucinogenic drug on our own unique ways. He stood stone still beside me, the shock of his visions reflected in his eyes. The sounds of infernal chanting echoed in the cavern. Shadows swooped overhead. Dr. Hapsburn's hair stood on end, and his expression was one who had seen the end of all things. Violent tremors racked his body. Great pulsing growths burst from his skin. His face was frozen in an expression of mortal agony. He thrust out his arms, urging me back. "Roberta," he wept, "turn away, turn away." My heart started in my chest. I felt as if I were drowning. My lungs felt crushed from the cave's pressure. My legs grew weak, and I could no longer stand. I staggered. I stumbled through the mist of illusions. "Roberta," Dr. Hapsburn sobbed, "turn away. Don't let it pollute you." "What?" I gasped. My tears burned me. "What do you see?" he began gibbering. The sounds of insanity, sounds worse than any that echo from the depths of Payambrum Sanitarium. What words do I have left? What thoughts? It's beyond thought, beyond hope, beyond terror and despair. Oh God! What God are you? The eyes! The eyes! I am your servant. I am your slave. Spare me! Spare me! His hands danced in the air and curled fingers descended on his face. My hands covered my mouth in horror as his hands dug at his eyes. His body was arched backwards in beatific torture. His body twisted and turned in transfigurative ecstasy. I wanted to see, and in my arrogance I saw. Spare me! I cannot abide your hideous glory! The great coward that I am, I couldn't put out my hands to help him. I could only crawl brokenly from the cave. Surrounding me was muttering, the chanting growing louder with each repetition. The visions were beyond my comprehension, sights with no name, sights that should not be named. His final words to me, save yourself. I too willingly obeyed. I shouldn't have looked back, but like Orpheus, like Eve, I have a taste for the forbidden. What was left of him? What became of him, I'm too afraid to say. My mind has hidden the memory. Fragments come back. Fragments in my dreams. When I'm in between the worlds of this place and that. A sickening tangle of limbs. Organs that should have remained inside the body but found their way out. Expanding flesh. A pulsing sheen. A froth. Of eyes. So many eyes. The priests, the flames, the gelatinous thing upon the throne. Was he remade? As a malicious god would make him in his own profane image? Can they see me? Can the walls of the asylum keep them out? I can hardly sleep, let alone dream. I've been marked as one of their own. And when I do dream, in fits and starts, in my nightmares, I am back in the cave. Dr. Hapsburn sits upon a throne. He lives there still. He will remain there, everlasting, as long as rock and cave remain. I know not what animates his body, or even my own. I only know that it infects me still. My dreams are a gateway, and unfortunately, the portal opens both ways. Just as I can travel to their worlds, they can travel to ours. It is late, and the heaviness of the sleep is upon me. The stars have crossed, and they signal to the heavens. The door will soon open, and then it will be too late. So I implore you, gentlemen, flee. Flee! You are now in the gravest of danger! The darkness within me pulses. It awakens. Leave now before I shed this skin and release what lies within. I am about to be remade in his own image. For what you see now, you don't seem to realize. I am only the bud. And I am about to bloom.
And remember, to support this program and gain access to bonus Chamber of Fright episodes, please do pay us a visit at patreon.com/TalesOfWonderPod.